Thank you, Anu. Good morning. It is a beautiful spring day. I'm learning this is the time of the year when the sun feels so good, but it kind of hurts a little bit, doesn't it? Friday, on my lunch hour, I went to library hour with my family, and there were more people at the little singing and story reading that there had been. Everyone's coming out of hibernation, but everyone was kind of squinting, you know, like, is that, oh, okay. Maybe a little bit too much exposure to the sun too soon, right? It feels good, but there is a little bit of pain there. Man, it's a nice day outside. When's the last time you referred to someone as being not all here? Last time you were talking about me, right? There's a best-selling fiction author, Terry Brooks, and he writes a lot of fiction, but one of his books is about his life as a writer. And the opening chapter, he starts off talking about this story of his grandmother and his great aunt, so two sisters, sitting in church, and he's next to them, and they're talking about this lady who sits up in front, and they're saying, oh, it's so-and-so. No, that's not so-and-so. She died, but it's this other person, and here's who this is. And at the end of it, they say, oh, but whoever she is, she's not all there, right? She's not all here. Those kind of conversations never go on at church, right? Meaning that there's kind of something missing, right? They're here bodily, but their mind is somewhere else. So he goes from that story, and he says, me, as a writer, I'm not all here. And he tells another story about how he's sitting he says his wife tells this story often, that they'll be sitting in the living room and his wife is reading the newspaper and shares with him a story from the newspaper that she thinks he would be interested in or ought to know about. And he will acknowledge and he will nod and he may even comment on that. And then 5 minutes later, she passes the paper over and he reads and says, hey, honey, do you read this? She says, yeah. He says, I'm not all here. He says, as a writer, I spend about half my time in the real world of family and friends and bills, you know, for obvious reasons, right? Because you'll crash your car in a ditch if you don't spend at least some of your time here. But he says the other half of his time he has to spend in the fictional world that he's creating. There's this world of fiction that we all pay money to know about. He creates characters, and if he doesn't spend maybe half his time in that fictional world, those characters drift away and the richness of the setting begins to die. He says that writers, you know, and this is even for nonfiction, so it doesn't have to be just made up stuff, but if you're telling a story, if you're writing a story about a real life experience, in order to convey that experience to someone else, you have to spend time in that world of the past. Does that make sense what I'm saying? So you're here as a writer in the real world, paying your bills, loving your family, but then there's those moments where you're not here. Maybe we're all a little crazy, right? C.S. Lewis might agree with this, but he would expand this to all humanity, and he would say that there's a spiritual side to all of us and a physical side, and it's not like we're humans who someday will have this spiritual existence. C.S. Lewis would say that we are spiritual beings. We have a spirit, and that's primarily who we are, and we're having this brief human experience right now. We have this world that is described by our senses. You know, that's what your senses are doing for you. They're telling you this is a little too hot or a little too cold, or this tastes really good, or no, that doesn't taste so good. This is the kind of sound I like. Our senses tell us about the physical world. But there's a spiritual world out there, and I'm not trying to be mystical. I'm just saying there's a realm where God is, and we're not. Our senses, the five senses we have, aren't going to tell us about God. That doesn't make him fantasy. It doesn't make him not real. It just means we're people who live in two worlds. Think about some of the songs. Brady led us in one of these songs. This world is not my home. Truly, this world is not my home. We're going somewhere else. We're here for a brief time. This world is not my home, but this is the day that the Lord has made. This world is not my home. I'm going somewhere else. And yet, if you woke up this morning, this day has been given to you by God. We're going to another world, but we have to live in this one right now. We've been studying, or at least in my sermons, the minor prophets. And I think if you want to distill one of the core messages of the minor prophets, the 12 writings that were packed into the end of the Old Testament, they're coming to God's people and they're saying, remember, you are not of this world. This world is not your home. You've got to remember, this world is not your home. And yet, God has given you this day to live. This is the day that the Lord has made. Can you think of those two songs in your mind? Can you hold those two ideas in your head? We're a people who live in two worlds. Luke chapter 20, go ahead and turn there. We'll just note a few passages from there. Verses 9 through 18, if you want to know the story of the minor prophets very simplistically, Jesus does this amazingly in his teaching. He'll take this broad expanse of history and experience, and he'll say, you know, it's this simple story about a vineyard and a guy who owns the vineyard and the people who rent the vineyard and the people who come to remind the renters that they are the renters. Jesus distills much of the Old Testament into this simple passage and story here. Now, we've gone over six of the minor prophets so far, and so today I want to look back and give some perspective and review those six before we enter into the next series of them. Look at this story here. This owner of the vineyard, Luke chapter 20, starting in verse 9, this owner plants a vineyard, a grape vineyard. And what does he do? He looks to lease it to renters or to tenants. And then he leaves. Does his influence matter anymore? Think about this. These the renters and the tenants, they now live in two worlds. They live in the world that their senses can see and experience. You know, they can taste the grapes, and they can tell this person what to do, and they can gauge the weather for how they're supposed to grow their crops. And yet, they need to remember that there's a world of the owner who maybe they don't experience with their senses, but it is nevertheless very real. They live in two worlds. Jesus encapsulates this in this parable for us. Their sensation tells them about the vineyard, but the owner's world has a profound impact upon what goes on and the attitude that must be carried in this farm, in this place where grapes are grown and turned into wine. And what does this owner, the owner is God, but what does this owner do? Well, first of all, let's back up for a second. Maybe you've had this frustration, or maybe you've talked with someone who says, you know, God doesn't really talk to us, like his voice. We don't hear his voice physically. And it's caused some people to say, well, God is dead, right? God is a fantasy because we don't hear from him. And in this parable, Jesus doesn't dispute the fact that God himself goes for long periods about being silent. He says, yeah, it's like a guy who planted a vineyard and then he left and you didn't hear from him for a long time. But how did the owner communicate with those who were working in that vineyard? He sent the servants. And who would these servants be? We're talking about the minor prophets here, and you could also include Isaiah, Jeremiah, other of the major prophets. So he sends these servants, and what's the message that these servants are supposed to share with the owners of this vineyard? They're coming from the owner, from God, and they're telling the people who run this farm, they're saying, look, this vineyard is not your home. You are renting this place right now. You may act like you own this place, but you really don't own it. This vineyard, this day has been given to you from the owner, from God. Psalm 73, verse 9. The Psalms, this psalm here encapsulates, I think, the attitude that the people who are working the vineyard have gotten into. There's the song, "This world is not my home, I'm just a passing through." But sometimes we change the song to, "This world is my home, as long as I've got more than you." This world is my home, as long as I get to keep it all, right? Or rather than, "This is the day the Lord has made, I will rejoice and be glad in it. This is the day that I've made, and I'll get what I want, or I'll throw a fit." Psalm 73, verse 9, describing the attitude that these vine growers, the tenants, have gotten to. "They set their mouths against the heavens, and their tongue struts through the earth. They speak as though there is no spiritual realm. There is no owner outside of them that controls things. And their tongue struts through the earth." What is your tongue? It's an organ of sensation, right? And so they take possession of the world all for their own sensation. They just want to taste things until there's nothing left to taste. They want to experience the world until there's nothing left to experience. And that's all that exists in their mind. Verse 10, "Therefore his people turn back to them and find no fault in them. And they say, how can God know? Is there knowledge in the Most High?" These people have forgotten what it means to live in two worlds. They said, how can God know? Does God even know? Is there any kind of knowledge in the Most High? "This world is my home. This is the day that I have made." Go back to Luke chapter 20. Because the owner, God, has been silent for such a long time, they think, well, he must be dead. I think that's really what they think. Chapter 20 in Luke, verse 13. "And the owner said yet a third time, this one also they wounded and cast out." I'm sorry, verse 13. "Then the owner of the vineyard said, what shall I do? I will send my beloved son. Perhaps they will respect him." The owner's been sending servants, and they've been getting abused and mistreated and killed with this message. And so he says, "I'll send my son." But notice what the tenants say. It tells us something about their thought process. Verse 14. "When the tenants saw the owner's son, they said to themselves, this is the heir. Let us kill him so that the inheritance may be ours." What's the thing about an heir owning the inheritance? I am the heir of me and my brother and sister. We're the heirs of my father's estate, and yet I don't have it now because my father is still alive. And so what are the owners of this vineyard thinking? If they think we're going to kill the son and then we're going to get his inheritance, what must they think about the owner, about God? They must think that the owner is dead and that the son has possession of the inheritance. And so if we just kill this, then we get to keep this vineyard for ourselves, and we get to keep everything that's inside of it. Is that a perspective at all of today, that, you know, we don't hear much from God, and so therefore he must be dead? The spiritual realm isn't something that we interact with our senses, and so it must not exist. God gave his people a nation, but the leaders wanted to do it their own way, and they wanted to ignore the fact that God lived. He killed those, the servants, the prophets, who wanted to remind people that we all live in two worlds. This world today that we live in, where Christ is rejected and Christ is ignored. You notice the bottom there of chapter 20, verse 17? But Jesus looked directly at them and said, "What then is this that is written? The stone that the builders rejected has become the cornerstone." Everything that is good and pure and true and moral that is represented in Jesus is ultimately rejected when Jesus is rejected. And thank goodness that this world isn't our home. Haven't we had enough just this past week to remind us that this world isn't our home? I mean, do you want to live here forever? You want to live to be 100, 150, whatever, so that you can experience as much of this world as you can? This world where Christ is rejected is not our own. We have constant reminders that we were made for something more. There's more to life than what we gather with our senses. Come with me to Psalm 118. Because this is the psalm that Jesus is quoting. And there's something really fascinating about, after he talks about the stone that the builders rejected, Christ that was rejected, the son of the owner who was rejected and killed. Psalm 118 in verse 22. The stone that the builders rejected has become the cornerstone. This is the Lord's doing. It is marvelous in our eyes. Now tell me if this sounds familiar. This is the day that the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. Thank goodness that we don't live in a world forever where Christ is rejected. And yet, the very next few verses say, but this is the day that the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. That was the message of the minor prophets, that this existence you have is not all that there is. And yet, that attitude is going to be displayed in how you live each day. Let's walk through the prophets that we've looked over together. If you want the history of the prophets, at least the ones that we've covered so far, Obadiah, Joel, Amos and Micah, Jonah and Nahum, you can make an argument that most of them fit between 2 Kings chapter 8 and 2 Kings 21. This is the history. If you want to know the facts of where these people existed in real life, then you go and you read the history. But the wonderful thing about the prophetic books is that if you want to know what's going on inside the spiritual half of people, then you read the prophets. You go to the historical world and you read the history, and you see what they experienced physically and with their senses. But then you go to the prophets and you understand a little bit deeper about what's really going on in people's life, how God is moving and acting and what their attitude should be and how he is calling them to that. There's two sides to this. Let's start off with Obadiah. We'll just go through briefly here. I was going to play Let's Name That Prophet, but I went ahead and gave you the name anyway. This prophet speaks to people who had been betrayed by their family. Remember, Jacob and Esau were always at war with each other, and Israel, the descendants of Jacob, and Edom, the descendants of Esau, they were still at war with each other. And if you've ever been betrayed or stabbed in the back by a family member, that's kind of the sense of how they got along here. History tells us that these two nations were in strife, that these families were in strife. And yet, what does the prophet say? The prophet doesn't stay caught up in the problems. The prophet goes deeper and he says, here's what's going on. Obadiah verse 15 says, the things that you do to others are going to be brought back upon yourself. If someone has wronged you, then just know whatever you give back to them is going to be given back to you. The prophet speaks about the need for forgiveness. This world is not my home. The wrongs done to me will someday be as nothing. I mean, imagine that. The sins that have been committed against you, people who have betrayed you, someday, God willing, we're going to be able to look back on those and say they were as nothing, because that world was not my home. And yet, if this is the day that the Lord has given us, then how I handle what someone has done to me has profound impacts, not only on my life, but upon this person who has hurt me as well. Maybe someday my enemy will become my friend. And so Obadiah's question is, have you cleaned your side of the street? Have you forgiven even when people have harmed and hurt you? Let's go on to the book of Joel. History tells us about a people who are growing in their independence. They're not as dependent upon God anymore. And there's this natural disaster that rocks all of them to the core. And Joel says, look, the only secure thing is God. All it takes is for a locust plague. And you remember that you're really not as in control of things as you thought you were. And the prophet reminds them of their need to repent. Joel chapter 2, 12 and 13 says that return to God and repent in sackcloth and in ashes. Connect with God through not feeling guilty about your sins, but by uncovering them to God and saying, look, here's the things that I've done wrong. I'm not going to hide them from you anymore. This world is not my home, and someday my personal struggle with sin will be finished by the grace of God. Aren't you excited for that day when sin is not going to weigh you down anymore? This world is not my home. Someday I will be free from that. And yet, this is the day the Lord has made. And my struggle reflects not only my personal growth, but it helps me to help someone else who is struggling with that same struggle. How about the prophet who was a shepherd and the prophet who predicted the shepherd? Do you remember who they were? Remember Amos? Remember I said if Amos was up here preaching, you'd probably smell him from the back row. He was a shepherd. And then Micah comes and he says that Jesus is coming and God is very much like a shepherd and that he needs nothing but he cares for the needy. History tells us that during the time of Amos and Micah, that Israel was very wealthy and they were entitled, right? Entitlement. I've got all this stuff and I deserve to have all of this stuff. And yet Amos tells us that they were neglecting those who were in the most need. As long as I have what I want, it's okay, but this person who's needy, I'm not going to pay any attention to them. And the prophets come and they say, you live in two worlds. This world is not my home. Someday the problems of poverty and need will be vanquished. We're never going to get rid of poverty and the poor until this world is gone. That's what Jesus said. You're always going to have the poor with you. It's never going to be a problem that you solve. And yet this is the day that the Lord has made. And the God who needs nothing spends his time serving the needy. So serve the needy and realize it's always going to be a problem. It's always going to be a struggle. And yet it's what God calls us to do. And the last two that we covered a few weeks ago, it was a prophet who didn't want to preach the sermon God had given to him. You remember Jonah? God said, I want you to preach this. And he said, no. I don't want to go preach forgiveness to this people who have been so evil and vile to me. He wanted to preach the message of Nahum, right? Nahum's message was that God is against Assyria. I will throw filth at you and I will destroy you. And Jonah says, yeah, that's what I want to say. God says, no, you need to go and you need to preach forgiveness to these people. History tells us that Assyria was brutal and that Israel was a victim. And yet the prophets come and they show us that God's reach is big enough to reach both of them. To reach out to the wounded prophet and also the brutal nation that abused so many people. This world is not my home, and someday I'm going to understand God's plan for me. Why he forgives Assyria and why he challenges Jonah so much, I don't understand that right now. Someday I will understand that. And yet, because this day is the Lord's day, just because I don't grasp God's plan doesn't give me an excuse to be disobedient. God says, it's okay if you don't understand everything I want for you, but it's not an excuse to just do whatever you want. Trust that God can work in you, even when your house gets cluttered. A nation living in two worlds. They experienced betrayal, and yet Obadiah called them to forgiveness. They lived selfishly, and Joel called them to repentance. They struggled with entitlement, and Amos and Micah called them to give freely. They were mistreated by the world, but Jonah and Nahum call them to preach, to share. Now think about this. Aren't those good messages? Isn't that good moral living? Isn't that the kind of thing that you would want to pass on to your friends, to your family, and to your children? And to think that these prophets were rejected and beaten and killed for such a wonderful message. And yet this is the God we serve, who continually sends us prophets in the Old Testament, and who sent us His Son to tell us, you're not of this world, and yet I've given you this day to live for me. Let's finish in Psalm 118. Two questions I want to leave you with here. The first question, and it's okay if you struggle with this question. You can answer yes, no, or maybe. Are you going to where you need to go? Or where are you going? Are you walking toward heaven? Are you walking toward a life and a world beyond this place? Or are you content to live here? I know sometimes I'm content to live here. I know that as a Christian, that I have a place in heaven, and yet I don't always think that way. Sometimes I act as though this world is my home, and I need to get as much stuff as I can. Ask yourself that question. Where are you going? Are you content with this world, or are you living for another place? Where are you headed? And the next question is something that you're going to ask of somebody else. Where are you going, and what are you going to do about it this week? There's a book, I think the title's something about for frazzled mothers, right? And it's a mom who's trying to do everything and trying to keep her house in order when the kids just keep demanding her time and the husband's lazy and all of these things. And it says, take three things that you wish you could accomplish in the next week or two. Communicate those to your husband and say, could you help me accomplish one of those things? Whether it's, I want to go to the gym, or whether it's, I want to, you know, have a meal just together, or just something simple. Not like I want to abolish, you know, war and solve all of those kind of things, right? Let's apply that kind of application to our spiritual life. Where are you going? Are you walking toward heaven? What's something that you can do this week to help get your mind right about that? Ask that question of somebody. What are you going to do about the fact that you're not of this world and you're going toward heaven? And then tell that person, how can I help you accomplish that this week? Maybe the person wants you to pray with them, or to go find somebody to serve, or to go visit somebody, or maybe just to have some quiet time to meditate. We're not talking about something earth-shattering. But ask each other, where are you going and what are you doing about it this week? This is the message of the prophets. We live in two worlds, and it's not because we're crazy. It's because this world is not my home, and yet this is the day that the Lord has made. If there's any need that we can help you with, if we can help you get in a right relationship with God so that you can look forward to heaven, or if we need to help you get your relationship back in line with God, then please come forward while we stand and sing together.